Thank you very much for staying with us on Jamaica Speaks. I'm Gladstone Wilson.
And I'm Rosalie Hamilton.
And you know, the question of Syria is in the news, listeners. We talk about it almost every day because it's shifting different dynamics to it. And we know here that there's an agreement. You saw John Kerry and the foreign minister of Russia having a meeting that there is an agreement about what is going to happen with the chemical weapons owned by Syria. So we call on persons who can help us in this discussion. Nadeem Shahadi is Associate Fellow, Middle East and North Africa at Chatham House in London. We want to welcome him. Morning, Nadeem.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good morning, Nadeem.
And we want to welcome back Dr. Imad Ad-Din Ahmad, President at Minaret of Freedom Institute in the United States. Welcome back, Dr. Ahmad.
It's a pleasure to be back with you.
Good morning, Dr. Ahmad.
Nadeem, can we start with you? Give our listeners a kind of roundup of what has happened in the last 24 to 36 hours between the United States and Russia.
Well, what's happened in the last week, let's say, is far more complicated than what's happening in Syria. Because what you have is the coming together of the ghost of lots of previous conflicts. Iraq, Afghanistan, the Cold War, and a kind of personality clash or if you like, a battle of wills between the President of the United States and the Russian President Vladimir Putin to find a solution to what's happening in Syria. And what they've come up with is highly unsatisfactory from the point of view of anybody in the region here, because they've come up with an agreement to control chemical weapons in Syria. What's happening in Syria is not about chemical weapons. What's happening in Syria is about a regime that's been killing its people for the past 2.5 years. And this chemical weapons business is a huge time waster. It will get the regime off the hook for a very long time and give it a license to kill, to continue suppressing the opposition in Syria. What's happening in Syria is far simpler than what's happening outside. It's a revolt against a regime that's been there since 1963, and people don't want it anymore. They want freedom. They don't want a dictatorship. It's a very simple formula.
Dr. Ahmad, your view, do you agree with Nadeem that America should have taken a different course in terms of trying to deal with the matter of the use of chemical weapons?
Well, I agree that it's certainly a very complex situation, but I think that if you look at it, you will see that for all the parties that have an interest in this, as with all negotiations, there are trade-offs. So the only group that I think perhaps has come off with nothing are the rebels, those rebels who were counting on an American military intervention in the short term. That's now not going to happen. It may still be an intervention, but it's not going to happen right away. And I think they were severely disappointed. For any other group that I can think of, I can see positives and negatives. For example, for the Israelis, you have the prospect that Assad is going to lose his chemical weapons. This gives them a short-term gain because, of course, the Israelis never ratified the Convention Against Chemical Weapons, and that means that in the event that they get another war with Syria, they would have a strategic advantage that they have not in the past. For Assad regime, you have a short-term... on the other hand, for the Israelis, you have a long-term possible loss in that the prospect that the United States may not be available for attack on Iran later, because with Russia's reemergence into the diplomatic field, they've shown how they were able to work something out for Syria. There's a possibility they may also be able to work something out for Iran in the future. On the other hand, for Assad, you have a short-term gain because he's back in business again. He's back. Well, he's not using chemical weapons, and of course, I don't think it was ever proven that he was the one who used them before. But it doesn't matter. He's got lots of other weapons that he's now employing in full force against against the rebels and against the civilian population. On the other hand, by having to give up the chemical weapons, he may have just made one more step towards his eventual demise. You can go down the list of any of the other stakeholders, whether it's the Americans, the Russians, the Iranians, the neighboring Arab states. There's pluses and minuses. And even for the rebels, I think for most of the rebels, there are pluses and minuses, and that's why you won't find a universal reaction among the rebels, but you do find among the Syrian rebels the strongest negative reaction, again, because, as I said, there was a group of them that were really counting on an American intervention in order to put an end to this prolonged survival of the Assad regime.
Mm-hmm. Nadim, you're currently on the ground in Beirut. Give us a feel for the temperature there in Beirut.
Well, I mean, two things. First of all, you have to look at the context. We've been through 2 years of what's called the Arab Spring. There's a strong irreverence to authority. Mm-hmm. Dictators who have ruled for decades have been ridiculed and brought down, and there's no more. The people are very skeptical. They've crossed several barriers. One is definitely a barrier of fear, and the other one is the barrier of reverence to authority. And what I see here is that President Obama has lost a lot of his credibility, and the United States has lost a lot of its credibility because of the way he's been, instead of playing chess with
Putin.
With President Putin, he's playing snakes and ladders in the sense he keeps climbing down and climbing up, and then making promises he doesn't deliver, and making threats that don't that come to nothing. And it's very worrying for his allies in the region. Mm-hmm. There are countries in the region that think that the United States is an ally and is a protector, and this is having a huge effect on that. The second thing which is feared is that we are now in a situation similar to Iraq in 1991, where the United States encouraged an uprising against President Saddam Hussein. And this uprising was, I mean, there was a revolt. They took over 14 out of 18 provinces in Iraq. And this was not just Shias or Kurds. This was across the board. And they were then abandoned by the United States, who was there physically on the ground. And Saddam Hussein was allowed to crush it. It was, this is what was called then Saddam's killing field. He probably killed in 1 month as much as Bashar al-Assad kills in a year. Mm-hmm. And then he drained the marshes. There were 500,000 people who lived in the marshes. There are now 20,000, mm-hmm, because of what he did in the 90s.
You know, one thing I find quite interesting, Nadim, is that the Russians say that in this agreement, we will be the person who verify whether there is a breach of this protocol. In other words, the Russian Federation, although they are part of an agreement, they will decide whether there's a breach. And it seems to me that the Americans would have lost the handle on this whole issue right there and then.
Well,
there is room for gaining time by the regime, which is endless. It will take months just to negotiate a protocol, and then there's endless manipulation. I mean, if you remember Iraq again, I mean, the reason why I'm mentioning Iraq is because the shadow of Iraq was sort of hanging over all the debates on Syria. Mm-hmm. Saddam Hussein did the same with the observers, and if we are looking for the prospect of the Assad regime continuing in the way it's been doing the last 3 years, with all the damage it's doing to Syria and to the region, to the countries surrounding Syria, Lebanon, Iraq, Jordan, Israel, of course, is worried. I think that it's we are probably seeing the worst possible case scenario.
And Dr. Ahmad, let me hear your comment on what Lindsey Graham and John McCain have said. They have called this protocol meaningless, that what Obama has done is to sell out the United States and the rebels in particular, and he's not supporting some of the things he had said before with respect to what Assad has done. How would you react to that?
Well, I think that's a slight exaggeration, because one has to remember, and Nadim has made an excellent point about the parallels between what is happening now and what happened in 1991 with Iraq, but I see one important difference, and that is that Obama simply said that chemical weapons use was a red line. He never actually said what we would do about it, and therefore his reaction could be viewed, I know his critics have viewed it as snakes and ladders, but I think that it could also be viewed as a measured and cautious reaction. And given all that's at stake, given the fact that American popular opinion is very much against military intervention, as well as most of the world, so that you saw that even the British Parliament refused to agree to participate in a military intervention, it seems to me that his caution is justified. Now, as to where that's going to lead, I think that we have to, you know, see what's going to happen next. We have the agreement says that the United Nations will be the guarantor of the agreement, and the fact is that Obama has never said that he's taken the military intervention off the table. Mm-hmm. In fact, John Kerry has said quite clearly that it's still on the table. So therefore, if he ever intended to do a military intervention, which is not totally clear, he can still do so.
Nadim and Dr. Ahmad, we want to take a break. We ask you to hold the line. We'll continue this discussion when we come back.
The National Health Fund, taking a healthy interest in you. The time, courtesy of the National Health Fund, is
6:45.
Join us at 9:15 every Monday evening for Sportsline, the best one-hour sports discussion on radio. Sportsline deals with the issues, presents the facts, outlines the highs and lows, and still has time to take your calls. That's Sportsline with host Wayne Lewis. Sportsline, Mondays 9:15 to 10:15 p.m. on Hot 102 FM.
What's the one thing you want from life? More money, new car, nicer house? Maybe that one thing is financial peace of mind. Loan Masters from Money Masters is a new loan package designed just for you. Short-term loans the fast and simple way. So let's get started on that one thing and set up your no-obligation consultation. Just email info@moneymasterslimited.com or call 754-198-024. Loan Masters from Money Masters. Plan now, master tomorrow.
Now we have to reset the mindset.
Let us hold fast to the principle of one Jamaica for all Jamaicans.
Now we have to reset the mindset.
Jamaica's ability to compete effectively.
Reset the mindset.
I am a parent who wants an honest and transparent Jamaica, motivated towards self-empowerment, a place where my children will always be proud to call home.
Now we have to reset the mindset.
Why me black and why? It's robbing and killing.
Now we have to reset the mindset.
to really become independent in thought, word, and deed, to be the most beautiful and peaceful country to live in.
Now we have to reset, reset the mindset.
Hot 102 FM, fully aligned with Brand Jamaica.
We're discussing recent developments surrounding Syria and chemical weapons with Nadeem Shahadi and Dr. Imad al-Din Ahmad, right here on Jamaica.
Can I just say,
sure.
I can't hear Dr. Ahmad very well.
Okay, we'll...
when he speaks, it's very faint, yes.
Okay. All right, Nadeem, we'll try and boost up the levels to make sure that you can hear.
You. Nadeem, it seems as if the American people does not have the appetite for a war, and that's kind of... It seems obvious, and Obama's posturing seemed to be mindful of that, certainly going to Congress and getting the voice of the people and so on. So therefore, is it even, you know, yes, it might be from your perspective a snake and ladder approach, but the fact that America is not at war, isn't that significant from the perspective of the American people? On this matter,
well,
anyway.
Yes. And I would, if I were, I understand very well why Americans are against the war because of the legacy of Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm asking for is a reinterpretation of the legacy of Iraq, because what happened in Iraq before 2003, before the invasion, between 1991 and 2003, is in fact what destroyed Iraq, what divided it, what created all the hatred and all the sectarianism and the geographical divisions that we see now in Iraq. The Kurdish areas, the Shiite areas, and Sunni areas were created by the no-fly zone, the poverty, the extremism generated by sanctions. All of that is the cost of non-intervention between 91 and 2003. So what I'm worried about is that the cost of non-intervention in Syria now will be far higher than any risk of intervention now. And
why do you say
the
that?
American people, well, because I mean, think of if Saddam had been removed in 91, we would be in a much better place in the region. And if there was a firm intervention to stop the killing in Syria in 2011, we would be in a far better place.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a huge cost to allowing a dictatorship to destroy the country and to kill its people.
But
and we've already seen enough of that. And yes, sorry.
I was just saying, there's also the cost, of course, of intervention and the proliferation of the kind of instability that we've seen in the Middle East. So are you suggesting that the cost of non-intervention outweighs the cost of intervention?
Absolutely, yes. I think that if we allow the current situation in Syria is the cost of non-intervention in 2011. If we allow it to continue for another 5 years, the cost to the region will far outweigh any risks. Now, what we are seeing also in the United States is a narrative of the Iraq war that's political. Politicians make the worst possible historians. And you have the current administration has described the Iraq war as a defeat, as a disaster, as illegal, as a mistake. And, of course, the American people, when they hear this, they are against intervention, whereas I think that the crime that was committed in Iraq is before 2003. It's allowing Saddam to continue his killing fields, And the intervention in 2003 came as a liberation. And what we saw in terms of chaos and all that after 2003 is in a way caused by the period before and caused by those very dictators that are being deposed now, because Bashar al-Assad was himself promoting al-Qaeda to go to Iraq. Mm-hmm. And the Iranians were also promoting chaos. None of the regimes in the region wanted Iraq or the United States to succeed. And the figures in Iraq post-2003 are highly exaggerated. Mm-hmm. The figures before 2003 are much more significant in terms of damage. Just ask a question. If Saddam Hussein was still in power today, mm-hmm. and there was an Arab Spring revolt against Saddam, you'd see hundreds of thousands of people killed.
Dr. Ahmad, would you agree that the cost of non-intervention is higher than the cost of intervention?
No, I would not. I think that if we look at the history, both in the case of Iraq and Syria to date, all the evidence is to the contrary. It was the intervention in Iraq that resulted in the current situation, not the delay of the intervention. And it was the intervention, even though it was a lower level in Syria, that led to the current situation. We have to go back and remember that initially the demonstrations in Syria were peaceful demonstrations, that the Assad regime responded with force is true. However, we have to remember that the Mubarak regime responded with force in Egypt as well. And we have to bear in mind that what has happened is that intervention in the early stages, limited though it was, as limited intervention in the case of Iraq was to encourage the rebels. So it was, while Obama at no time said what he was going to do if a red line was crossed, the fact is that there was American intervention, aid of a very limited sort, intelligence aid and so on, and a lot of sideline cheering to the rebels to go ahead and move from a peaceful resistance into an armed resistance in the impression given that the United States would back them up. And therefore, I think that the acceleration of the situation in Syria can be laid at the feet of even such limited intervention as there was. And I think if we accelerate the intervention to the point that we had it in Iraq, we will be accelerating the violence and the consequences to the point where they are now in Iraq.
But Nadim, is this agreement between the United States and Russia going to be a restraining factor on Assad, you think?
Not at all. No, I think it gives him carte blanche to continue suppressing the revolt. Now, I agree with Dr. Imadeddin on many of his points, but one has to put figures to make the picture clearer. The United States hesitated for a very long time before promising help to the revolution in Syria. In the end, the amount that was pledged was $110 million. What was delivered is $10 million. To the revolution. So there was no effective aid, and it was in communications equipment and some food parcels.
Isn't that because there was some reservations about the competition of the opposition?
I think, well, you see, part of the reservations about the composition of the opposition is, to a large extent, also a creation of the regime itself. The regime released all the Islamists it had in its jails, all the al-Qaeda types that we see in Syria were in Syrian jails. They were released, and the regime was jailing teenage bloggers at the same time. And so what Assad did was what every dictator in history does: create chaos, release prisoners, release brigands, release extremists, create chaos, and then this would make people want the stability firm of dictatorship back. So it's part of a mind game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think where the problem lies in the United States is that the Obama administration has locked itself in a narrative where the intervention in Iraq was bad and where engagement was good, and they had engaged with Assad as an example to show how wrong Bush was in isolating Assad. And now they cannot admit that they were wrong. And what is needed is another intervention for the sake of the region, for the sake of the interests of the United States as well.
I mean, we pause.
And if you want to put figures to the casualties before 2003, I can give you a sample. There were 1.5 million dead in the Iran-Iraq war, which was encouraged by the United States on both sides. There were in the crushing of the uprising between 91 and 93. There is anything between 60 and 300,000, depending on the figures you hear. The consequence of the sanctions were close to 500,000 dead. That's the lowest figure possible. Saddam Hussein, when he felt secure that they did not want him out of there, went village by village, house by house, and assassinated everybody he knew that was part of the revolt.
I see.
And this is what Bashar al-Assad will do.
You think that he'll do that?
I've seen him do that, and now that he's secure, that he can play the game of chemical weapons and all that, which is a charade. He has a free hand in doing anything he likes, as long as he doesn't use chemical weapons.
Well, we have to leave it there, and we are really interested in the insight of Nadim Shahadi, Associate Fellow Middle East and North Africa Program at Chatham House in London. We want to say thanks to you. Coming from Beirut, you see, we go wherever the story takes us. And Dr. Imad Ad-Din Ahmad, President of Minaret of Freedom Institute in the United States. Thanks to both of you for joining us this morning.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
All the best.
All right. So we have completed our discussion on Syria, and there's much more to talk about. And we have to watch, Rosalie, what happens in the next couple of days. There's a one-week deadline for Assad to identify all the weapons. We'll see if that is done and what develops in Syria and in the United States. Because Republican senators are saying, you're joking, Obama. You should go in and, as they say in America, kick some ass, But we'll see. Listen, we take a break now. We come back at 7:15. You make sure you join us, but we invite you to listen to News Now on CVM Television.
Stay tuned.